This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 26, Rotate the Strike. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about that classic cricketing skill, rotating the strike, picking up those singles, picking up those doubles, how you train for it, how you do it in a match situation. And then we go on to answer a couple of questions. One is about splitting up a four-hour training session. That's pretty intense. And another is about bracing the front leg off a short run-up. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to better cricket. This is half an hour to help you improve your game in some way, or maybe improve the game of others. And that's certainly what we do. My name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things here. And helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches, the first of which is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Gary. You're not at Millfield today, though, are you?
I'm not. I'm in France somewhere, but I can't actually tell you where because I don't know the name of the place that I'm in, but it's very nice and the coffee tastes good.
Well, that's all that really matters, isn't it? You know, the details are irrelevant in these circumstances. Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School, but again, someone who's not really doing that at the moment, it's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavis.
Hello.
Living a life of luxury.
Living the life that, well, I don't think luxury is entering it at any stage at the moment, but I'm living some kind of life, and not living a life of cricket all day every day, because obviously school has broken up now, so there's a bit more free time on my hands.
Yeah, I've been following your exploits on Facebook and seeing pictures of empty calendars and blue skies and feet up in the park.
It's a delight. It is a delight. I mean, It obviously won't last forever, so I'm enjoying it while I can.
How long do you think it'll last before you start to think, do you know what, I need to do something here, rather, you know, instead of just decide what's for lunch?
Probably about another 48 hours.
Okay. There's a limit, isn't there? You've sort of wait for that day off for so long when you're busy, and then you get it, and after a couple of days you think, right, okay, that's enough. Battery's fully recharged.
Usually the limit for me would be about a week. But as we broke up halfway through last week, we kind of had 2 days at the end of last week, so I can actually tag on the whole of this week onto that. After that, I'll be looking for something to do. Send in job requests, everyone.
Fantastic. But let's start with talking about some cricket. See if we can do that for a little while. And one thing that I was thinking about this week was a strike rotation. It's something that is talked about a lot, especially when you get to high levels of cricket. You know, when you get beyond the principle of, you know, hitting the bad ball for four and defending the good ball, you get to a point where you go, okay, so how can we start to get the scoreboard ticking over? And I feel like, especially at club level, it's one of those eternal conversations. You can never quite do it enough. There's always more to be done. So how do you encourage players, whatever level we're talking about, whether it's school level or whether it's, you know, first class international level, how do you get players thinking about rotating a strike and improving their skills in that way?
Well, I think you can start it in practice, because you know, good coaches tend to look ahead, don't they, to situations that players may be in. Where the wicket's maybe not so quite so good, or it's a bit stuffy, or a bowler, you know, is bowling brilliantly, and that's those things come up on a regular basis. So in your preparation, you're looking to try and facilitate that thinking of, you know, how do we rotate the strike? You know, how can you use momentum by getting maybe down the pitch to intercept the ball earlier, or to get your weight going through the ball a bit more, to hit the ball to mid off and mid on and run, to how to drop it to rotate, how to use your body getting one side of the ball or the other to open up an angle on the ball. You know, all of these things can be done in preparation. But what another way of doing it is obviously after somebody has had a bit of time at the wicket and got stuck in their reflections or in the conversations that you have, you talk about, right, what do you want to do if you face that situation again? So there's a proactive way and a reactive way that can both get to a point where people are more informed about rotating the strike.
Yeah, it's often it's a mindset thing, isn't it? If you have a team where the mindset is, you know, someone tries something, like for example, he's having trouble getting the ball away, so he moves out of his crease or he moves around in his crease to try and create an angle, and then he gets out. Then, if criticism comes from other players in the team saying, "Why did you do that stupid thing? That was silly. You should have just waited for the bad ball," then people are less likely to do it. But if the encouragement is from everybody to, okay, how can we start making runs here in a way that is beyond just waiting for a half volley, then there's less judgment and people are more likely to start doing it, aren't they, Lavis?
Yeah, I think if you have that shared motive and shared goal of what you're wanting to do, and also if you utilise that time watching on the side, so I think those teams that watch as a team, usually find that I think the learning amongst the group and the conversations that you have on the sideline without any kind of need for myself or the coach to lead them, but just the conversations that arise about the game create shared goals and shared ideas, and subsequently when people go on and try something and then they have success or they don't have success, it's something that is shared amongst the group because it's something the group have discussed together, and that probably gives people a little bit more confidence in their decisions when they're out on the field, knowing that what they're hoping to achieve and the way they're trying to do it is something that is already backed up by the guys that they're playing with and are supporting them.
I remember the start of this year, well, before the start of the season, I said to one of our opening batsmen, all of last season, I didn't see in the first few overs anyone looking to rotate the strike at all. So my dream for this season is to, in the first over of a match, have one of the openers knock the ball into a gap on the offside and take a single that's quick but safe. And in the first over of the first game of the season, that's exactly what he did. And I was absolutely delighted with that because for me, it is about skill, of course. But in the off-season, it's very hard to practice strike rotation. But yet in the first over of the first competitive match of the season, he looked for it and he got it just purely from having that mindset of going, I'm going to get this in the first over at some point because the coach has put it into my mind that that's something that can be done. So I was delighted that could come about in that way and that we could encourage people to rotate the strike in that way without doing any particular work on it at all. And then if you add the work on top, that helps as well, doesn't it?
And that's the way to do it, is to sow that seed, isn't it? Sow the seed, let it grow. And that's exactly what you saw in that. And that's exactly what, you know, you see in guys that have been well coached, haven't necessarily been well coached in terms of the technical side, but it's about opening up those mindsets. It's about painting that picture for them to follow. And that's exactly what they did in that case, mate.
And what about actual practical work that you can do in these situations? Middle practice can be hard to get right sometimes. It is a good thing to do if you do get it right, but sometimes, you know, people operate differently in middle practice than they do in games. So what can you do to encourage strike rotation in practice sessions?
Well, I think one of the most basic ones is a white ball practice. And obviously, if you're lucky enough to have pitch vision software, you can set it up and measure it in a slightly more objective fashion. But having a big white ball up, get the field drawn up, maybe identify the fielders that are in certain positions so that the batters can visualise not just the fact that somebody's there, but also their competencies, their strengths, how good they are. And you can build it up like so. But also, by having consequences for poor decisions. Now, those consequences can be very small, but as long as the lesson is learned that actually, you know, if I hit one straight at that guy and call yes, then the consequence is going to be that in a net situation is really good for them to start to build build up their decision-making processes that go around knocking the ball into that gap or this gap or that fielder and running. So you can do it. The other way of doing it is, as a coach, if you're throwing at somebody, setting the field, and as soon as you've let go of the ball or sidearm the ball, then you become the non-striker. And obviously, most coaches are significantly older than their players, a bit more experienced. So they take that experience into their ability as a non-striker. And you can build up the levels of what is available by informing them as a partner, as opposed to just being the coach at the other end.
Good fitness for the coach as well, that.
Oh, it's good, mate. I learned that off Tony Middleton, actually. Tony Middleton down at Hampshire. Fantastic. You did a session that I watched with Jimmy Adams one day, and they ran it at full stretch. Tony would only run one of, if it went to three, he'd only run one of them. But his ability as a bloke to bat with, having batted with him heaps when we played together, was fantastic. And I always enjoyed batting with Tone because he was a world-class non-striker and somebody that I knew that if I was facing somebody who might be a bit too good for me, if I could get it off in a certain area, then he would make the run for me. And he's taken that into his coaching, and you know, I'm sure that's one of the reasons why Hampshire have been so successful in short format cricket over the last 10 years.
And that phase, and that phrase, Lavers, a world-class non-striker, that's often not looked at, isn't it, in coaching? When you are at the other end, you can also get runs and help rotate the strike, can't you?
Yeah, I remember talking about this, and it's something that has come up on the podcast before, but there are things that we do as batters and bowlers and fielders where, depending on the level we're at, but inevitably we're probably not going to be world class at them, and maybe there isn't the opportunity immediately to become world class at something in a short space of time. However, there are other elements of what we do, and there are other parts of our game which, in all honesty, we should be actually sort of aiming to be world class at. And maybe it's not as glamorous to be a world class non-striker, or it's not as glamorous to be a world class kind of second phase fielder backing up, or whatever it might be. However, have some world class ability in your repertoire, because it's not easy to be world class at bowling swing. It's not easy to be world class at playing a sweep shot, whatever it might be. So be world class at what you can be.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with a yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more the team want to say. I've got the question, so let's fire away. First question, determination is the most important sporting attribute.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question, impossible is not a fact, it's an opinion.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question, response to fear is the most important thing teammates can know about each other.
No.
No. I think what's your favourite drink actually is the most important thing.
Now let's dip into the mailbag. That is a couple of questions that have been sent into the show, or maybe to the Pitch Vision Academy website. And we do our best to answer those questions, and whether we do a good job on that or not, then we pick the best question of the week and we give it a prize, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can email your questions to us at coach@pitchvision.com. And Barath's done exactly that. He says, "Hey guys, I see that when I amble up to the crease off a short run-up, I'm able to brace my front leg successfully. However, off a full run-up, the front knee collapses. Is this due to a lack of strength? What exercises can help with this? Lunges?"
Yeah, I mean, I think Lavers can probably talk in more depth than me about the type of exercises that people can do if this problem is occurring. But I would also say that when we do anything at a lower intensity, like ambling in and bowling with a slower run-up, obviously the forces that we are putting through various parts of our body are significantly less than when we go at full pace. So it could be strength, but there could be a number of other things. It could be the alignment of your delivery stride at that point in time. It could be how the alignment of your bound, which often is linked to the alignment of the delivery stride. It could be a huge amount of things. But obviously, as we increase pace and momentum, your mass is going to stay the same, but your momentum increases, then the energy that we're going to have to deal with our front leg hitting the ground is going to increase. So it might not be as simple as just having a strength and conditioning program. I'm sure that will help you to be able to achieve what you want to do, but it could be that there could be a technical reason why that front leg, when you do increase that momentum going into your delivery stride, is breaking down that technique. So difficult to really put the fingers on it without seeing video, and I know we say that a lot of weeks, but in this case it definitely is. If we could see video as well, then we could do some technical changes or encourage technical changes if it's required. And then I'll leave it to Sam to talk about the strength and conditioning angle.
So let's look at that, Lavers. If we assume that the technical side of things is in the process of getting sorted out in some way or another, what kind of strength and conditioning can a bowler do to improve their ability to get into good positions?
Well, I think whether or not it is a technical thing or a strength and conditioning thing, we should always be looking to kind of support what we do as cricketers with an element of the strength and conditioning behind it. So that could be of varied degrees depending on what our objectives are and how hard we want to push ourselves. But again, there will be lots of ways that we can develop our leg strength, and nothing needs to be that complicated, really. So simple lunges or reverse lunges are really good ways to develop that lower body strength. In this instance, we'd probably look at doing things which are single leg as opposed to double leg. But again, squatting is a really useful exercise for people, or front squatting. A lot of people will find is slightly less stressful on the body and the back in terms of flexibility. So that's another really good way to develop not only lower body strength, but also a lot of stability in that trunk and in that throughout the core. So that's another good way to look, and also anything else that you feel can replicate the exercise that you're actually doing and potentially where the problem is. So this would probably mirror more of a strength/stability thing if it wasn't a technical element. So you would be looking at things that are a little bit more slow and controlled, and things like step ups or things like single leg deadlifts or arabesques and things like that, which are really great for challenging muscles in a different way. And I would say try and be quite diverse with the different exercises you use. So you may use three or four things for a period of time, and then you can use another three or four and try and mix them up and keep challenging your body in different ways. If it was something that was a bit more power-related, then you might look at moving into some jumping activities and definitely hear some jumping and landing activities, because the landing activities might, again, be quite useful for the stability side of things, which we're probably looking to develop a little bit. But loads of different things, none of them that complicated. All of them would be beneficial, but like try and have something going on in the background. I very much suspect, as Gareth alluded to, that it could be something along the technical side of things, because the way you jump and land and move through the air, etc., in terms of the forces generated, but in terms of the position you will get into and the way your body will move, will be very, very different from an ambling as opposed to a running hard. So there's almost certainly going to be some change in the technical side of things, which is probably influential. But yeah, try and back it up with something from a strength and conditioning point of view, if you can.
And there is that sort of crossover area, isn't there, that Stefan Jones talks about a lot, you know, that area where strength and conditioning and technique kind of meet each other, because, you know, they're not complete opposites, obviously. There's an area in the middle, isn't there? And that's where weighted balls and medicine balls and bands and that kind of work really comes into its own, doesn't it? So you've got all those options of getting into the good positions, and then using something like a medicine ball throw to transfer that strength and power from from the pure side, the pure way of doing it in the gym, if you like, through to what you're going to be doing when you walk out to bowl in a match.
Absolutely. And you can do that in the same way you would develop yourself as a bowler, thinking about like simple reverse chaining techniques. You can look at generating a maximum power overhead throw with a med ball, for instance, or a single arm press with a med ball to like for some rotational power. But you can give yourself the progression to a one step, two step, five step run up, etc., simply based on the outcome of whether or not you're locking that front leg. So reverse chaining from a standing position where you know what you're doing, you know what you're achieving with that leg, and you're generating a good amount of power through the throw or slam of the ball or whatever it might be, and then reverse chaining that back so you can have a pathway to what you're looking to get to in the end, just like you would as a bowler, reverse chain to change technically, but also just like you would as someone trying to develop more power. So it's that ideal kind of crossover in between. Again, another aspect, not one of these things is going to be the answer. It's going to be a combination of things probably, but another way you can really challenge your body and hopefully improve the methods that you've got.
Next question is from our friend Kamran, who has been having an ongoing series of questions, it seems, throughout the show in recent weeks. And if you remember from previous weeks, Kamran has been training a lot, and we've been trying to work out sort of how to help him with how much sidearm to face and all the rest of it. Well, he's followed up with another question, and this probably is going to be the last one, Kamran, so don't expect too many more because you're starting to dominate the show a little bit. But I thought this was a good question, so let's talk about it. Cameron says, I practice 4 hours of batting a day, split into two sessions. I was wondering if it's better to have 1 4-hour session in terms of building better muscle memory for my shots and in terms of building physical resistance. So that's slightly unique, I suppose. But, you know, how do we feel about splitting up sessions or keeping one long session?
I think everybody has preferences on this one, to be honest. And you know, Cameron's in a part of a world where long cricket sessions, and in particular long sessions of batting, are commonplace. Whereas in the UK, in Australia, in South Africa, generally sessions are a bit shorter. So, you know, the longest sessions that we have nowadays are 2 hours, and that's more to do with the working day, I suppose, that people are having at school or when people are at work, as opposed to anything else, rather than being able to have that 4 hour batting session that, you know, does happen every now and again and quite regularly, actually, in the subcontinent. So, you know, 4 hours is a heck of a long time, and it's brilliant for developing certain aspects of cricket. I suppose when we're talking about muscle memory, which, you know, doesn't really exist in truth, you know, each muscle hasn't got a brain that itself to know exactly what's going on. It's a combination of a heap of different things. But when we are practicing, it's really crucial that we're practicing properly, and we talk about it all the time on the show. And the danger with having 4 hour batting sessions is that inevitably there's going to be times in that session where you're not going to be practicing properly because the body will get fatigued, the mind will get fatigued, your concentration levels and focus will go, and inevitably you will be doing things that aren't exactly what you want, and therefore you're not going to be building up those repetition levels that you're looking for, those components of the game, a drive, you know, your forward defensive shot, so on and so forth that you've listed in your question. So I would always be keen on having more deliberate types of practice, chunking it down rather than chunking it up as the main, and then to increase some volume when you're looking to be specific around building up that capacity to bat long periods of time and be able to manage your concentration up and down through a 4 or 5 hour innings, which is obviously where you're aiming to go with this. But yeah, to me, try and be a bit more deliberate, chunk it down a little bit more. If you're looking at technical stuff, definitely chunk it down. If you're looking at developing the ability to focus over a longer period of time, then of course your 3-hour nets, your 2-hour nets are really valuable. But again, when we're talking about nets, the difference in nets is that you're often facing a ball once every 15, 20 seconds, as opposed to in the match where we're much more likely to be facing the ball once every 45, 50 seconds. So again, you are sort of overtraining during a net in many ways in terms of that frequency of delivery. So just be aware that when you're having a 2-hour net against four bowlers or different people within those four bowlers, then actually you are training a far more significant amount of deliveries over a longer period of time in a game context.
Davis, how long would be the longest session that you would do?
2 hours, pretty much. I don't really think. Again, I think Gareth's kind of probably hit the nail on the head in my role, and probably the majority of what his role as well is. It's the kind of the working day. The sessions are almost kind of dictated to us in a degree, or they are to me largely in terms of time scale. So 2 hours is probably the limit. Every now and then there may be a specific instance where something happens and there is an extended period of time which is slightly longer than that, but it's probably not something I'd generally go seeking for, because I think if you plan and review pretty effectively, there's a hell of a lot you can get done in 2 hours. And we're fortunate enough, no, Gareth would be in the same boat, you're fortunate enough to have a reasonable number of sessions, so it's not a 2-hour session once a fortnight. You probably get to see guys two or maybe even three times a week if you're lucky. So yeah, 2 hours is the limit. I would be thinking in Cameron's case of, if you are batting for 4 hours, is that effective in the way you've planned it? Have you planned what you're looking for your outcome to be, and are you able to review it as well? Because that becomes a very big commitment to your cricket, and if you are able to do that, then maybe there is opportunity there. But equally, how long are you ever going to bat in a match for in a period of time? And you think about a session time, etc. Sessions aren't going to last for 4 hours. Generally, they're going to be a bit shorter than that. But again, maybe you want to overload and really challenge yourself there. And also, what do you enjoy doing, and what sits a little bit more uncomfortably with you? Because it might be that if you do 3 overs at a time, and you do 12 blocks of that, that maybe is more difficult for you. But in being more challenging, it could be something that helps you. So obviously, it's going to depend on what you're working towards and how you're looking to improve, and whether it's, Gareth talked about it being technical, or something that's a mindset thing, or something that's based on you learning how to play at the crease or whatever it might be. So yeah, lots of different ways to challenge yourself, but it will depend on what you're looking to do. But I wouldn't normally get up towards that 4-hour mark very often, if at all.
I think one of the things to consider is the format of cricket that you're looking to be playing and then looking to be batting for a long period of time within. So if you're looking at Test match cricket, for example, Test match cricket, if a player bats all day long in Test match cricket, bats for that 90 overs and faces exactly 50% of the balls that are bowled, which obviously is unlikely to happen, but you know, if they did, then you're looking at 270 balls in a given day. Now, if you're batting for 4 hours in nets, then I should imagine you'll probably be up beyond that. You know, if the intention is to be able to bat the equivalent of a test match day, which I think any test match player would consider to be a pretty fantastic feat of concentration, focus and skill, you know, 270 balls is exactly what you're going to have to deal with. Obviously, in a net context, you can get those in a much shorter period of time than you can do in a match one, for obvious reasons. So just think about what your aim is really when you're facing these huge numbers of deliveries. Always have an intention of, what am I practicing for? What am I looking to do? And if it is a test match day, then, you know, maybe think about limiting yourself to a figure around 270 rather than going way and above over the top of that. It's great, but remember that in test match, you're going to have a night's sleep before you come back and maybe repeat that again and back for 2 days. How about that?
And I guess as well, if you're training and you're getting something from it, then, you know, that's the most important thing. And then the detail of how long it is, it's nice to think about and it's nice to discuss. But if it's, you know, if it's working, if 4 hours is working for you, then, you know, and you've got the time, and you've got people who can bowl to you for 4 hours, then why not? You know, get on with it, as you always say, Gareth.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would be. If somebody can achieve greatness by batting for 4 hours every day of the week, and then that's going to be really interesting to me, because whilst the likes of Tendulkar and Ganguly and people like that have faced a huge amount of balls in their practice sessions, ability to go, actually, I'm going to have a day off, or I'm going to reduce my session to an hour or whatever, would have happened during their time. So it's not always the case that the amount of hours that I put in is going to determine success. It's about really having a real plan, and I suppose being, we talk about deliberate practice a lot, but it really is very relevant. I'd suggest that you look at breaking it up and maybe incorporate some of the things that Sammy and myself have talked about to make sure that you're mentally not fatigued when you go into your next match.
Yeah, quantity is not quality. Quantity is a factor, but as we've known from the many people who have gone to try and debunk the whole 10,000 hours and looked more in details into deliberate practice. It's about a lot more than just putting in the hours. It needs what you do in those hours is more important than how many hours you put in. So, yeah, fantastic point.
It's now soapbox time on the show. It's David's go. He's got precisely 1 minute. Nobody ever dares to challenge his 1 minute because he's always precise. Off you go, mate.
Had a training session last night, and it was interesting that we had some middle practice, which is it's a rare thing to be able to do when there's no games on and the weather's good, and you have the opportunity, you've got enough people at training that you can do some middle practice. And so everyone was mucking in and doing some middle practice, and it wasn't going fully to plan, but we stopped, we reset, we all had a chat and said, are we going to do this properly? And we said, yes, we're going to do it properly, and we started again. But there was one guy who decided he wasn't going to get anything from it, no matter what. And so he brought to the middle practice a mindset of, this is a complete waste of time. And so after about 15 minutes of moping around, not doing very much, he did a lap of the field, complained to everybody, and then went home. Now, he's a good player, but my question to him would be, do you get more out of going home and doing nothing, or do you get more out of doing something which may not be perfect for you in that exact situation? But you never know what you might learn doing things in a slightly different way. And that is the end of the show for another week. We are about to head off, but before we do that, we do need to do the very important part of the show, which is picking the winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy and pitchvision.com. And the two questions on offer this week are Barath's question about his braced front leg and exercises to help him with that when he's bowling, and Cameron's follow-up to his follow-up, which is whether we should do longer sessions or shorter sessions, depending on how much time we've got available to us. So, Gareth, which one did you prefer this week?
I'm going to go with Barrett's question this week about front knee collapse. I think it's a good question. I think we've given him a few tips. I'd encourage him to get a little bit of phone video action to get back to us so we can have a little look at that. But so yeah, Barrett wins this week.
Fantastic. Congratulations to you. And Gareth, if someone was listening to the show and wanted to have their chance to win the prize, how could they get in touch with us with their questions?
They could give us a call, David, on 0203 239 7543, or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That is correct. You can also get us through social media. Our Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. And you can get us on Twitter by going to @pitchvisionacad. You can also listen to the show every week if you go to your favourite podcast app on your phone or your tablet or your computer. You can do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. Just tap on that subscribe button and you'll get it for free every Friday. And if you want to get the show notes, you want to get the archive of old shows, you want to stream the show from the web, you can do all of those things and a lot more if you do go to the Pitch Vision Academy website. That's pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the details there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Labours.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys.
Well done, everyone.